Sacrifice plays a big part in success. I don't believe in luck. Hashtag underdog.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. Another team preview podcast is ready to go for you guys. This is a team I think has got a lot of intrigue, quite a few unknowns in terms of how these guys are going to perform. And I am talking, of course, about the Chicago Bulls. And to discuss the Chicago Bulls for this upcoming 2018-19 season, I'm joined by one of the hosts of the ever-rising Chicago Bulls Locked On Bulls podcast. That is Matt Peck. Matt Peck, that's correct. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Hey, thanks, Josh. Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you on for the first time to discuss the Chicago Bulls. You guys are killing it over on Locked On Bulls. So if you are a Bulls fan, make sure you're checking out Matt and Jordan over on Locked On Bulls. We're going to talk quite a bit of stuff here about the Chicago Bulls, about all their players, about the changes over the offseason. Michael Bolton's waiting.
Let's get to it.
That's a great idea, Michael. Let's start by looking at the projected record, Matt, for this team. You've gone with 34-48, which is considerably higher than the Vegas over-under of 28.5. To be honest, I think they're going to be significantly under the Vegas over-under of 28.5. Why do you have this level of optimism the Bulls are going to be considerably better than I think a lot of people think?
Well, yeah, I think it goes back to the fact that that win total from last season, yes, there was an unexpected 7-game winning streak, and the since-traded Nico Mirotic was a big part of that and their leading scorer in most of those wins. But they also missed Zach LaVine for the first two-thirds of the season, and then they also shut him down for precautionary reasons when they were really steering into the tank to finish the season. Chris Dunn's season was broken up between a lot of choppy fluke injuries. He had a badly dislocated finger to start the preseason. Then he had that nasty fall and the concussion in the game against Golden State midway through the season. And when he came back from that, he only was active for another couple of weeks before they shut him down with toe soreness, which basically was, again, precautionary, much like LaVine, because what they were really trying to do was get higher up toward the top of that lottery list. So when you think about a couple of those key pieces that missed large portions of the year last year, and then adding a talent like Jabari Parker and retaining Zach LaVine, I put it generously in the low 30s or the low to mid 30s, because I think that assuming that the Bulls front office is not planning on tanking this year, and that's what we heard from John Paxson since day one as soon as the season ended, they are trying to compete. So last season they were trying to tank. This season they want to win games. The Eastern Conference isn't all that great. It's gotten even weaker with the departure of LeBron James. There are people here in Chicago who are saying that the 28.5 over-under from Vegas is insultingly low. And some people in Chicago are talking about this young core winning upwards of 40 games. Personally, I think that's ridiculous. I am somewhere in the middle, as I gave you my projection of around 34.
Those people who think the Bulls are winning 40 games, they need to just calm down quite a bit, because this team's, it's not good. And I could make the argument, and Matt, I do apologize, because I used to be a Bulls fan. I sort of faded away from my Bulls fandom as I started covering the league as a whole. But there's going to be quite a bit of snark coming from me on this podcast. I think that's almost, there's no doubt about that, because I could make the argument that having Zach LaVine for a full season could actually make you go backwards in wins, because he's always been a negative player through his 4 years in the NBA. Maybe that's being a little bit harsh on Zach, but the team was 6.7 points better off per 100 possessions when he was on the bench last season. And that's been a consistent theme throughout his entire career. The teams have always been, the best season he had, that were 4.3 points per 100 possessions better with him on the bench. So that's not an insignificant amount. Again, I know the ACL injury, I know he can get better, but I'm still not convinced that he is actually a positive and winning player for basketball games. So there is a wide range of outcomes for this team. Because you said, look, maybe Jabari can regain some of that form. Maybe LaVine can take a step forward. Maybe Dunn can not be injured, which has really been a struggle for him throughout his entire career, including back at Providence in college, where he had two significant shoulder injuries. This always seems to be getting hurt. But there is clearly optimism. There are a lot of good young pieces on this team, and it is going to be very interesting to see how it all pans all pans out in the future coming up. But Matt, the Locked On Podcast Network, I'm sure you're aware, we are expanding into college shows. We're going to be launching shows soon for Alabama, for Arkansas, shout out to Bobby Portis, Kentucky, Tennessee, Florida in the SEC. We've got Oklahoma and Baylor coming from the Big 12, and Ohio State, Penn State in the Big 10, and lastly, Oregon in the Pac 12. That's our initial group of colleges, and there's going to be more to come. So if you're a fan of college basketball, of college football, make sure you're checking out the Locked On College Locked On Podcast Network expansion into the college show, which will be coming very, very soon.
They got to get an Iowa State one so Gar Forman can really expand his scouting efforts for the Chicago Bulls.
Well, I think that Fred Hoiberg will be looking for a job soon, so maybe he can host it. I told you there's going to be snark. There's going to be so much of it.
No, it's fair. It's fair. I appreciate the – I mean, Josh, I don't know if you know, but I'd say probably somewhere between 10 and 15% of our Locked On Bulls listenership comes from all over Australia. I don't know what it is about all the Bulls fans over in Australia, but there are a lot of you. So.
I will tell you what it is. I'll tell you what it is. It's because the NBA really, really kicked off here probably in 89, 90 when and it was all based on Nike promotion and Jordan stuff. So that was when I started following the NBA when I was like 10 or 11 around that time, the year of the first Bulls championship. So just everyone became, they either became Bulls fans or they became Hornets fans. And of course, since the Hornets disappeared.
And some of them are still hanging strong. God bless them.
Yes.
And it has not been easy sailing since the dynasty ended 20 years ago.
It definitely hasn't. And like I said, I've drifted away as I've started covering the league more, but there is an extraordinary amount of Bulls fans over here. Now, we looked at a projected leading scorer. You sat on the fence, so good luck removing those splinters from your ass as you went to choose the projected leading scorer between Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Which one of them is it going to be?
So I have two answers. My hope is that it's Lauri Markkanen.
Oh, yes, I hope so too.
My fear is that it's Zach LaVine. And look, to your point earlier about Zach LaVine playing a full season might not being a good thing for this Bulls team, I can't necessarily disagree with you there. Bleacher Report just put him on a list of the most overhyped players coming into the season, largely because whatever he gives you on the offensive end might not even get you back to net zero because of how bad he is defensively. And I absolutely agree with that take. But you saw when LaVine had a stretch of healthy games coming into January, the back end of January, February, and the first half of March, you saw Lauri Markkanen's field goal attempts dip down in each of those months. Markkanen's field goal attempts in January were 12.9, February down to 12.5, and then March down to 12.0. So LaVine, taking out Mirotić, who was actually the team's leading scorer for the time that he was here, for those who are still coming into this roster again this season, LaVine was the highest scorer on the roster, above Lauri Markkanen. And Markkanen's field goal attempts dipped when LaVine came in and became a guy who was really looking to get his shots up to prove himself and to try to reacclimate himself coming into the back end of a season that he missed coming off an ACL. So I think that Markkanen and LaVine, and then to a secondary degree, Jabari Parker, are going to be the three focal points of this offense. Chris Dunn is going to be asked to be the facilitator, the floor general, who's a pass-first point guard and really anchors them defensively in the backcourt because that's what Dunn does best. So I guess that's my answer. My hope is that Markkanen is our leading scorer. My fear is that it's going to be Zach LaVine.
Look, this is something that people may not realize, but Lauri Markkanen actually had the fourth highest usage on this team last season, not including noted chuckers Sean Kilpatrick or Antonio Blakeney. He was behind Zach LaVine. He was behind Bobby Portis, and he was behind Chris Dunn as well. Now, I don't know if that's a failure of coaching. I don't know if it's a failure of those players not to understand where the ball needs to go and which player needs to be, or if it's a failure on Markkanen's part of not being aggressive. Now, if it's on his part, then maybe with an extra year of confidence, an extra year of development, he can be more demanding. And we saw that, to a degree, happened with Porzingis in his third season. Like, no, you know what, guys? I need the ball now. You got to give it to me all these times. But Karl-Anthony Towns went through a similar thing last season where he just didn't demand the ball, and chuckers like Derrick Rose and Andrew Wiggins were taking double the amount of shot attempts, and a similar thing happened in Chicago. So that is the concern here. I would agree with you that I think LaVine is going to be the leading scorer. I agree with you that he shouldn't be the leading scorer. He saw his usage jump from 21 to 30 last year, and that is a huge, huge deep jump. He also saw his true shooting drop from like 58 down to under 50, which is obviously a horrendous, horrendous mark. Some of that is ACL recovery, but some of it could also be, you know what, maybe he's just not up to being a guy who uses 30% of possessions. And I think that the answer to that lies somewhere in between both of those. LaVine, in the limited time he played last season, 27 minutes per game, he was the 138th best fantasy guy, and that's obviously not great. Now, he's had better seasons than that in the past. The year before, when he tore his ACL, he was 57th because his efficiency was way up. He was scoring 19 points a game, but he was also playing 37 minutes a night, and he's not going to be doing that this season, is he, Matt? He's not going to be playing that Tom Thibodeau sort of load, but is he a chance for 20 points per game, and what else can he do? Can we actually get some assists out of him or some steals, or is it just going to be points and very little else?
Yeah, I think that's the primary concern among Bulls fans who are paying attention. And it goes back to that bit that Bleacher Report did on LaVine and whether or not he's actually going to be a net positive for this team. Because when he was in mid-season form as best he could be last season, and jacking up a lot of ill-advised shots, as you were saying, his shot selection was not great last season. And when there were only a handful of games, I want to say 11 or 12 games, when Dunn, LaVine, and Markkanen were actually on the court together last season, and the offensive efficiency numbers from that small sample size were not good. And there is video evidence, if you go back and look at the tape, of plenty of opportunities where Markkanen had a mismatch down on the post, and LaVine just either didn't see him or chose to ignore him and ended up taking an ill-advised three-pointer or a contested long two-pointer. And obviously, Fred Hoiberg would like it if LaVine turns into a reliable threat behind the three-point line as part of Fred's pace and space offense. But a contested long two, as I'm sure know, Josh, anyone with half a brain who watches the NBA and covers the NBA knows, is the least efficient shot you could take. And those are the shots that Zach LaVine tends to take. And he hasn't really shown a whole lot as far as a guy who can make his teammates better and create opportunities and other good shots for his teammates. To me, that is a big concern for this Bulls offense coming into the season.
And that's something I think you should be concerned about when looking at LaVine's numbers in terms of fantasy value. On Yahoo, they've got him ranked as the 69th best player.
Giggity!
I think that's too high. He'd need to get back to Minnesota level of playing time and efficiency to get to that, and I don't think either of those things are happening. I think he's an interesting top 100-ish type of guy, but if he's just not doing enough in those other areas and not being efficient, then that doesn't really help. The positive there with is he hits a good free throw percentage, and he gets to the line, and he improved that by 50% last season versus the year before, and that's a good thing. If he can get to 5 attempts on shooting 81%, that's a pretty good contribution in the free throw percentage category, so that can help you. Let's pivot now to Markkanen, the other guy that we did mention here, who had obviously an impressive rookie season. He was better than I expected. Again, I do always tend to view Bulls things quite skeptically, and I hear and I go on these Bulls forums and subreddits and read this stuff, and people are talking about Markkanen like he had the greatest rookie season of all time, guaranteed star. I think he played well and he shot efficiently, but he does have issues. He has defensive problems, and from a fantasy point of view, he just doesn't block shots, he doesn't get steals, he doesn't get assists, and his field goal percentage, for as good a shooter as he was, it just doesn't add up to the guys who are getting those 50-52% marks as power forwards or centers. So the first question is, will Lauri Markkanen ever be able to block any sort of shots? Because that's a real key to him being going from a guy who could be a top 60 guy or a top 30 guy. Will he ever be able to block even a shot per game? Because it feels like it's a long way off at this point.
Yeah, it's a good question, Josh, and it's kind of a scary question for Bulls fans right now, because as you see the league trending towards smaller and smaller lineups, and we also saw the Bulls use their 7th overall pick to take the rookie, the very young rookie, Wendell Carter Jr. from Duke, who you pair him with Markkanen in the front court, and that's a very exciting young front court to have with this early years rebuild moving forward. Wendell looks like he could be a great defensive player, and certainly showed a lot of that. He had the highest block rate of all the bigs in D1 basketball last season at the collegiate level. As for Markkanen, and your point there, only averaged 0.6 blocks per game in his rookie season, and even though the Bulls brought in Wendell in this most recent draft, there has been talk about the Bulls ideally hoping to find some lineups where they can shift Markkanen to the five. And especially this season, when you add in Jabari Parker, who they will be playing out of position at the three, you also have Bobby Portis coming off the bench as a four and maybe a five in some minutes. But the Bulls are going to need to find some ways to play Jabari at the four, and that might entail shifting Markkanen to the five. We have seen him put on about 10 to 15 pounds of muscle this offseason, really hit the weight room. So you hope that adding to his frame can kind of help him bang with some of the bigger bodies defensively when he's being asked to play some defensive minutes at the five. I'm cautiously optimistic that Markkanen can make that transition, but we really didn't see a whole lot of signs of that in his rookie year.
He's a guy that he played under 30 minutes per game. I think that's going to bump up this season, so that'll help the scoring, it'll help the rebounding. But like you, I am worried about where the shots are going to come from, because not only is Levine going to be there for a whole season, but now we've got Jabari Parker, who's definitely not afraid of chucking shots, and obviously Chris Dunn, someone who's unaware that he can't shoot, was taking tons of those last season as well. So I'm not sure. Markkanen should be the number one option, but there's a legitimate chance, again, he is the fourth option on this team, which is not great. And considering that Fred Hoiberg was giving the green light to someone like Justin Holiday over Larry Markkanen last season, again, I have no confidence in him being able to right the ship and give the shots in the direction that they need to go. It's not like you just need to dump the ball down to Markkanen and say, go to work. Like, he can be used in any sort of situation. You run him in pick and roll, pick and pops, run him in different areas, and he can be that guy. But yeah, my faith in Hoiberg being able to do that, and the faith in the players around him being able to, you give those opportunities up to him, it's a little bit low at this point. And I think that alongside the lack of defensive numbers and low field goal percentage for Markkanen will probably keep him from being able to achieve that rank, where he is ranked at 50th on Yahoo. And look, he could get there. It's not an egregious number, but it is going to take quite a bit. He'd probably need to become an 18 or 19 point per game guy, get 9 rebounds, and then you can get to that level. And just with those other guys around, that might be a little bit of a challenge to get to that spot. Matt, the injuries, we talked about Levine and that tendonitis that caused him to sit the end of last season. That was definitely 30% tendonitis, 70% tanking, wasn't it?
Absolutely.
It really hasn't even been
a story in the offseason with Chris Dunn. Like, we've heard nothing about the toe tendonitis in the entire offseason. Everything we've heard is that Chris Dunn is coming into this season fully healthy.
Let's talk about Chris Dunn now. He's not a player that, again, I've been massively high on. I was always, I think his offensive contributions, and I get into arguments with people all the time on Twitter. Imagine that, getting into arguments on Twitter. About Chris Dunn, I think he's quite a negative offensive player, but I do give him credit because he's one of the best defensive point guards in the NBA, and he did improve a significant amount last season. But I still worry about the shot selection from Dunn. I think he doesn't necessarily know how to run an offense. But in terms of what you saw from him last season, do you think the Bulls are sold on him being the point guard of the future? And are you sold on that? Can he develop into a guy who can run an offense with 3 other superior offensive players around him, which is what he's going to be trying to do this year?
Yeah, it's tough, and I think a kind of unfair element to the conversation going on here in Chicago is that Chris Dunn is already 23 on his way to being 24, which doesn't sound all that old, but then you think about the fact that Markkanen's 21. You know, we just drafted Wendell Carter, who can't even legally buy a beer yet here in the United States. There's this perception that Chris Dunn has already kind of run out of time to improve his game because he is the oldest of this young rebuilding core. And I think that's a little misguided. There are obvious concerns to his game, particularly on the offensive end. Defensively, he's on his way to being one of the best guards in the game.
Yeah, he's great.
You know, he averaged 2 steals per game last year. That was top 5 across the league. Offensively, the big problem with Dunn is, you mentioned the shot selection. He is not a reliable perimeter shooter yet by any means. He improved his 3-point percentage from his rookie season to his second season, 28.8 as a rookie, 32.1 in his first year in Chicago. So a little bit of an uptick there. But really the biggest problem is that he's not great finishing at the rim. So if he's taken what we would all collectively agree to be ill-advised, least efficient mid-range jump shots, bad shot selection, those are the shots that he knocks down more regularly than when he steps behind the 3-point line or he drives to the rim. Chris Dunn can break down defenses off the dribble. The problem is he can't finish at the rim, or he certainly didn't do so well in his first year at Chicago. And Bulls VP John Paxson cited that specifically when asked about where Chris Dunn can improve in the offseason coming into year 2 with the Bulls. And I can't disagree with that. If Chris Dunn can not only continue to improve upon his role as a pass-first, not-shoot-first point guard on a roster that has Markkanen needing shots, Jabari needing shots, and Levine needing shots, and all the while increasing and improving his assist-to-turnover ratio, who a point guard whose primary job is to take care of the ball and find open looks for his teammates, That's priority one. And then priority 1B is, when Chris Dunn does keep the ball himself after breaking the defense down off the dribble, maybe make a layup every once in a while. Hey, some and ones would be pretty nice too.
It would be great if you could actually hit a shot and or you know, not take those shots. His true shooting was not great last year, 48.8%, which is obviously horrible on a 25% usage. But for fantasy, he was the 51st ranked player because he got you 6 assists, over 4 rebounds, 2 steals. Yeah, those are really strong numbers. Still scored 13 points and only played 29 minutes per game. I think that'll go up this season. I think his rank on Yahoo is outside the top 100. That is ridiculous. He is, to me, is a guarantee for the top 60 and probably should be pushing into the top 50. And if you are letting, if you're getting him around that pick 100, it is absolutely massive value. It's probably one of the most valuable guys on Yahoo where their actual value differs from their rank at this point. So he is one of those guys you should be targeting, for as much as I don't think he's a great player. And I get roasted for these takes all the time. I think that Cameron Payne outplayed him at times last season, especially with his ability to shoot. Yes, defensively, he's not good, but you know, I think that Payne is still a viable player, and people kill me for this and they hate that take. And obviously the Bulls are committed to Dunn and he's going to be getting these minutes. But there is still obviously that element of concern there. Hopefully the injuries aren't too much of a problem after 3 different types of problems last season. And again, just know when to take the shots and then hit the ones that you have to hit. And that's the problem that's going to be there.
Right.
Or at least know if you can't shoot, give it to someone else. Let someone else do it. And he had the perfect guy to like model his game on, an elite defensive point guard who can't shoot, in Ricky Rubio in Minnesota. But he's taken all the bad parts of not being able to shoot, but didn't realize the parts where you don't have to shoot. So that's, the concern with Dunn.
And if I could just interject here, Josh, to kind of follow up on the back end of your question about do the Bulls see Dunn still as a piece of this rebuild? And this is a take that I have gotten grilled for here in Chicago, but I think there's some validity to it. People always talked about LaVine being the primary piece of that Jimmy Butler trade that went down on draft night last year. And I think at the time, that was the general consensus. And at the time, it wasn't necessarily so misguided because of the 3 pieces, Markkanen, the rookie, who we didn't know a whole lot about yet and had questions about coming into the NBA, and Dunn, who had a ghost of a rookie season in Minnesota, where, hey, guess what? Bulls fans know Tom Thibodeau doesn't play rookies any real minutes. LaVine was a centerpiece. I had the take, and still do have the take, that the Bulls saw Chris Dunn as just as important of a piece of that trade as Zach LaVine. Because Bulls fans so quickly forget that before the Jimmy Butler trade of 2017 happened, the Bulls front office so highly valued Chris Dunn coming into that 2016 draft as a 4-year player at Providence that they nearly traded Jimmy Butler 2 different times on 2016 draft night to get Chris Dunn. They were talking to the Boston Celtics at 3, and they were talking to Minnesota at 5 about a Jimmy Butler package that would allow them to get Chris Dunn. It didn't happen, and of course, Dunn ended up going to Tibbs and the Wolves at 5, but they never took both of their eyes off of Chris Dunn, even after they didn't get a deal for him on draft night in 2016. And that is why he was a part of that Jimmy Butler package a year later.
There's nothing that says a good front office like someone being inflexible and having a narrow vision on somebody and continuing to covet them even after they suck in their first season. So shout out to the Bulls front office once more. Let's talk about a good move they did make. I did like that selection at pick number 7 of Wendell Carter Jr. He was excellent in summer league, showed great perimeter defense, switchability, protected the rim, shot the ball well, passed it fantastically. I think he's got that top 50, top 30, top 25 fantasy upside, not for this season, but give him 30 minutes and he will be a top 50 guy. The problem is here, Matt, is that Robin Lopez is going to be the starter at the start of the year, and Carter has to battle him. He has to battle Markkanen with those minutes where he shifts to the 5. He's got to battle Punch Bob Shiploke, Bobby Portis to get his minutes at the 5 as well. So initially, it might be slow going for Wendell Carter, but clearly he is the center of the future. And how long do you think it's going to be before he is starting games for the Bulls?
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And I think everyone here in Chicago, as much as Bulls fans and the organization collectively appreciate and respect the veteran center, Robin Lopez, he's one of the most liked guys across the league. It's hard to find anyone in this league who has a bad thing to say about Robin Lopez.
Right, Blake.
Was a consummate professional last year during a tumultuous tanking season where he started and then was asked to be, you know, playing a bench role. And Robin Lopez said, I get what you're doing here. Don't even bother giving me bench minutes. I'll just sit. Let the kids play, and was very professional in the way he handled that. Coming in, he is projected to be our starting center, and everyone in Chicago is saying, we love and respect Robin Lopez, but we cannot wait to see as much of Wendell Carter Jr. as possible. Because even those who doubted the pick when it happened on draft night have started to come around. with Wendell looking like one of the most dominant players of Summer League, with everything that we've seen from Wendell, the people who didn't pay attention coming into the draft, but then once we figured out who our draft pick was, actually went back and watched some Duke games, primarily the Duke games towards the end of the season when Marvin Bagley was out and Wendell took a larger piece of that offensive pie. People in Chicago are really hyped about Wendell Carter Jr. now. The problem is, even if the Bulls try to shop Robin Lopez on this trade market coming up to the midseason trade deadline, the market value across the league for traditional centers like Lopez are at an all-time low right now. So unless the Bulls are willing to give Robin Lopez away for literally nothing more than a ham sandwich, it is going to be an awkward situation to say, we have reached a point where we've seen enough of Wendell playing a bench role that we want to shift him into a starting role, and most importantly, so that we can see him playing minutes alongside Lauri Markkanen, our front court of the future, where they will, again, be in the uncomfortable position to say to Robin Lopez, if they can't find a trade partner for him, hey, Rolo, we got to start Wendell, and we appreciate and respect you, and this is just the way that this season is shaken out. As for when that happens, my hope is that Wendell is starting before All-Star break. But again, this is the Bulls front office. Who knows how they handle these things?
That's a great point. Now, that's the big question mark, I guess, with Carter for his fantasy numbers, because when he's coming off the bench, he'll probably play 18 minutes a night, 19 minutes a night, because they'll probably use, you know, Portis and Lopez at center as well. Not that Robin Lopez is going to be playing 32 a night, but he might play 24. You might get 6 or 7 there from Portis at center, and you get 18 or so from Carter. That's a possibility. And in 18 minutes a night, Wendell Carter is not going to be a top 150 guy. And if that lasts for 4 months, then that's a wasted roster spot for 4 months. But when they crank him up and give him 27, 28 a night, and if that starts in February, then maybe it's not going to be worth holding on to him. But if it starts at Christmas, if it starts in the middle of December, then you've got 4 months of Carter being a top 60, top 75 type of guy who might score 10 points, get 8 boards, have 1.7 blocks, get a steal, give you 3.5 assists, hit some threes. He can do all that if he gets those minutes. But where that split is between him, and when you go, guys, look at Basketball Monster and you look at our projections, you'll see a number of minutes there in the middle there, but it's based on, you know, a real low first half and then a higher second half. And when that transition happens is the risky portion. So by all means, you take him at the last couple of picks of a draft in that last zone. You see what happens, see what the words are. Maybe Lopez gets traded before the season. Who knows? I'll doubt it, but it could happen. You know, keep an eye on these things and you see. And then if eventually it's stretching, we're into December, into Christmas and nothing's happening, then maybe it gets too hard to hold on to what amounts to a wasted roster spot there. But we all love him long term, and it is an exciting situation. And I am glad, Matt, personally, the Bulls picked Carter, because I know the other guy that the Bulls fans were clamoring for was one Michael Porter Jr.
Ooh, yeah. And I was
the answer.
Oof, there's your answer. The more and more we learned about Michael Porter Jr. and his situation with his medicals and his back injury, as we were getting closer and closer to draft night, the more and more I was saying, oh my God, no, Bulls, stay away, stay away. And I was terrified because, as I'm sure you know, Josh, Michael Porter Jr. spent a good portion of the early offseason in Chicago because his agent, Mark Bartlestein, and Priority Sports Agency is primarily based here in Chicago. And they have a great working relationship with the Reinsdorfs and the Bulls front office. You span back to even the days of the Bulls dynasty, and Bartlestein Priority Sports clients were on those Bulls rosters. And there have been somewhere between 30 and 50 in the span of the dynasty ending to now. Bobby Portis, Bartlestein client. The second of our two first-round draft picks, Chandler Hutchison, Mark Bartlestein client.
The old draft promise.
No, yeah, exactly. There it is. Knowing that Michael Porter Jr. had that connection with his agency to this Bulls organization, I was terrified that they were going to swing for the fences on him. But my take that countering the take of a lot of Bulls fans saying this team is so bad and you need to swing for the fences on a superstar potential guy like Michael Porter Jr., my counter was, this Bulls team is so bad that they can't afford a bust. Maybe Wendell Carter Jr. doesn't have a ceiling as high as a healthy Michael Porter Jr., but you eliminate a big chunk of bust risk. And I was kind of validated, and those of us afraid of Michael Porter Jr. were validated when it's not like the Bulls passed on MPJ at 7 and then he was immediately scooped up by Cleveland at 8. Yeah. No, he fell all the way to 14 with the Denver Nuggets saying, all right, well, at some point, we just got to take a chance on a guy who, risk versus reward, this could work out really well for us. But it's a sign that it wasn't just the Bulls, even with their connection to MPJ's agency, saying, you know what, these medicals are too scary for us, we're going to pass.
Let's change tack a little bit here. And go to some guys who probably won't have too much of an impact. But the Bulls two-way guys, we saw a little bit from them last season, Antonio Blakeney and Ryan Archer-Jacano. They weren't really afraid to get them into the mix at times. But they've only got one two-way guy at this point. That's Rolly Alkins, who played quite well for the Raptors in Summer League. And I think he's got an opportunity here with this team to make an impact. I was surprised he didn't get drafted. He showed athleticism. He could score a little bit. Some defensive stuff from him as well. So the Bulls, you know, using those guys last season, Blakeney and Archer-Jacano, do you think that was more of a reason because of the tanking issue? Or was it the fact that they like them and they want to use that extra flexibility on those two-way guys? And could Alkins be in a similar sort of position that we saw Blakeney last year?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, the Bulls were one of many teams who all of a sudden saw the new two-way contract that the league put into place and said, this is a great idea, and we absolutely want to capitalize on this. And it was really with the, you know, right around the same time, only a year prior, did the Windy City Bulls come into existence. And so to have that, and a lot of these D-League teams also, the affiliates to their NBA team are not necessarily geographically in close proximity. Whereas Windy City Bulls are out in the burbs real close by. So anytime the Bulls have one of these guys on a two-way player and somebody was unexpectedly listed as inactive coming into the night, whether it was tanking or whether it was an injury that they were just being overly cautious for because it is a tanking season, they could quickly call those guys up and have them just be a warm body to play minutes. Blakeney has since earned himself a real contract, and a lot of that is the fact that he proved to be a guy who can come off the bench and get you points in the NBA, and obviously a guy who dominated Summer League and dominated the G League. He led G League, I think, or was one of their leading scorers in G League, 32 points per game, one G League Rookie of the Year. It's a question of, all right, well, what's the level of difference between dominating the G League and being a legitimately useful bench piece on an NBA team? And I think we're going to find that out about Antonio Blakeney this season. Rolly Alkins, who you mentioned, is an interesting pickup. I don't project him to be playing a big role on this Bulls team this season at any point, unless all sorts of horrible, you know, injuries happen in that backcourt where they're just sort of grasping at straws. But to me, of all those pieces, Archie Diacono or Rolly Alkins or Antonius Cleveland is another guy they picked up and just kind of stashed to bring into training camp to give him a look. Blakeney's the one who earned himself a contract with his collective body of work and might actually get some real minutes off the bench.
They also brought in Derek Walton Jr. from the Heat, who was a two-way guy from Miami last season, but I agree that Blakeney's going to be the guy out of that group of bench guard wing type players who gets the most playing time. He'll also be the guy that takes the most shots and probably be the guy that misses the most shots out of that group as well. He's definitely not afraid to shoot. Sometimes he'll have some great shooting nights. We saw that in Summer League, we saw it in the G League, but other nights he will struggle to get that ball to go. And he played 19 games last season and shot 37% from the field and 29% from three. So the G League production didn't really translate to the real NBA. We'll see exactly how that goes for this coming season. Matt, with this team, they're a team that does get quite a bit of national coverage. We know that the Bulls are a well-known team across the country and across the globe. But is there any sort of national myth or misconception about Chicago that only those of you who are deep in embedded in Chicago would be able to say that's rubbish? Why do you guys keep talking about that?
Well, I mean, I'm probably going to get myself into some trouble here, Josh, but I have over the course of the last few months on Locked On Bulls somehow gotten the tag of being the Garpax defender of our show. And really, it's not. It's just the fact that there is so much hate aimed at the front office in this huge market and this city that is obsessed with its basketball team, that at some point, if you're just yelling fire Garpax into the empty night sky over and over and over again, but in a podcast, it gets really old really quickly. So just for the sake of keeping things interesting, I take the role of devil's advocate on the show sometimes and just remind Bulls fans who are so fed up with this front office for the most part that they are not entirely incapable of making the occasional right move.
That's true.
This fan base wants to go out and say they haven't made a single correct move and as long as I can remember. They can't scout, they can't draft, they can't facilitate trades, they can't do anything right. Looking back on it, the Jimmy Butler trade looks to be of pretty good value when you think about the fact that nobody ever gets equal value for a superstar player like Jimmy. And even with Jimmy as your best player on a mediocre team, that team was going nowhere. you got three solid young pieces that you can hope build around, and you hope at least two of those three pan out. Fast forwarding a year, that Jimmy Butler trade looks a lot better, and it got panned on draft night. This Bulls, and a lot of this goes to some of the younger generation Bulls fans who don't even really remember that Paxson seized power in 2003 after the Bulls kicked Jerry Krause out of town. And at that time, Gar was already instilled as one of the major scouts of the team and was promoted to director of player personnel and then promoted to GM, you know, 6 or 7 years, however many years it was after Paxson took control as VP. All of this misconception nationally that this front office can't draft and has just nothing but swings and misses in the draft is what I would say is the most egregious when it comes to not being correct about how you're judging a front office. Because, yes, they kind of screwed up when they decided to take Tyrese Harris over LaMarcus Aldridge in 06 and deciding to sacrifice two pieces that ended up being Gary Harris and Yusuf Nurkic to get Doug McDermott didn't turn out all that well. And those are the two that Bulls fans always go to when hammering this front office, particularly about their drafting. Let's also remember that they got Jimmy Butler 30th. They got Taj Gibson in the 20s. They got Bobby Portis in the 20s. They got Lou Alding and Ben Gordon in the same draft while executing some trades to make that happen. They drafted Joakim. Like, there are all sorts of hits, and they are still above 50% on hits versus misses. And it just so happens to be that some of the really strong drafts were closer towards the beginning of this Paxson reign, and that Bulls fans are so quick to point out the misses, particularly in recent years. Oh my God, I can't believe you took Marquise Teague instead of Draymond Green. Okay, well, yeah, a lot of teams passed on Draymond Green too.
Yeah, no, that's completely fair enough. I think their drafting has been strong. It's more just the fact that they just have, it's their complete disregard for the second round of the draft, the complete nonchalance, which they tripped
them. I didn't mention Jordan Bell. That was going to be my last point. Oh, yeah. Man.
My take on the Jordan Bell situation is pretty clear. I think it was absolutely ridiculous that they sold that pick. I know that they didn't sell Jordan Bell, but Jordan Bell was there and he should have been picked in that spot. But it's their reasoning that comes out like, oh, we didn't have anyone in our draft board. Like, you know what? Even if that's true, don't say it out loud. Like, this comes off horribly. Saying like last year, doing your press conference in the draft while the draft's still going on and saying, oh, you know, we didn't think there was anyone of any value in the draft left over, so we're not even bothering to make any moves. It comes across terribly. Like being the only team to not send someone to the Euro draft scout camp looks terrible. You can say, oh, we've been doing it all year. That's great, but it looks stupid. And when you've got this reputation and it keeps happening and keeps happening and keeps happening that you just have zero regard for these things, you just look stupid. And that's my concern. And maybe the results work out, but cover your bases, do the right thing, provide that, you know, that common sense. And the Jordan Bell one, it's totally inexcusable to me. But again, the amount of people who I get into arguments with Chicago, oh, no, Bell's terrible anyway. It doesn't matter. Well, we're better off with that money because then we can use it to sign Sean Kilpatrick. Like just stuff like that.
Right.
Weird takes.
Like, the misconception here in Chicago among insane, mad, smoke coming out of their ears, Bulls fans on draft night were saying, I can't believe you traded Jordan Bell to the Warriors. When really what happens is that the Bulls just traded the pick.
Yeah.
It's not like they were interested in Jordan Bell or scouted Jordan Bell at all and then traded him to Golden State for $3.5 million. But to your point, they should have been. You're talking about a team that is the third largest market city in this league that is largely becoming, you know, a league rivaling the NFL in popularity, and a team that is, regardless of whether or not it's a big market team, perennially a team that is in top five across the 30-team league when it comes to making money and selling tickets, selling out their arena, and selling merchandise. And a team that is that prominently should be respected across the board as one of the biggest marketable teams across the league can't do things like have a player on their draft board for their second-round draft pick. Like, come on. That's an awful look.
Yeah, you've got a pick at number 35, therefore let's put 27 guys on our draft board. That is the sort of nonsense that gets me riled up about this front office. But enough about that. Let's look at here. We've already talked a little bit about Robin Lopez, and he is the player listed as the most likely to be traded. You'd be pretty stunned if he ended up this season on the Bulls roster. It's just a matter of when he's going to have limited minutes for the season again, be the opposite of Wendell Carter, play the higher minutes early and then start to drop down as the season progresses. he's not going to be a viable fantasy option really in any sort of situation. For some reason, he's still getting drafted in the top 150 on Yahoo. I've got no idea why. I don't think he should be even sniffing the top 200. So don't be looking too much for Lopez. And even if he does get traded to another team, he's not getting traded under the impression that he's going to be in there as a 30-minute per game guy. He's always been a better player than stats guy, someone who impacts the team's performance in a better way rather than going out there and getting those numbers himself. Protects the rim, allows other teammates to get rebounds, but doesn't block shots or get them himself. It doesn't take huge amounts of shots, although last season he had this weird usage spike where he was taking huge amounts of shots at times. And again, it leads me to question whether Fred Hoiberg actually had control of how that offense was going to run, because some of the decision-making and the top two shot attempt guys were Justin Holliday and Robin Lopez at times. Wasn't necessarily the making of a great offense. We talked about Wendell Carter as a draft pick, Matt. Chandler Hutchinson at 22, is he likely to be a rotation guy this season? Is he going to be battling the hammer Denzel Valentine for those minutes? Or where's Hutchinson fitting in for this season, and what can he potentially be in the future?
Yeah, that's going to be probably one of the most interesting battles to look at in training camp and then some of these early preseason game minutes. Is can Chandler Hutchinson as a rookie prove himself enough to leapfrog Denzel Valentine and Fred Hoiberg's rotation? Because you're right, that's primarily where the focus is going to be. To your point about Lopez being the most tradable piece, Justin Holliday, we just forget on a daily basis that Holiday's still on this roster because nobody here in Chicago wants him to be on this roster. He's not a piece of the rebuild, and he's not really even a viable trade option at this point because his stats last year were terrible. Yep. Like, yeah, he plays a more useful position than Robin Lopez, and he's on a very cheap expiring contract, but I don't know any team across the league right now that can say Justin Holliday's the guy we need to come in and score off our bench. Like, at the same time, the Bulls have the problem of, all right, well, we have Justin Holliday, we have Denzel Valentine, and now we have Chandler Hutchinson. So when you're talking about those minutes at, you know, combo shooting guard wing position and who gets those minutes, with now the Bulls shoving Jabari into the starting three spot so they can keep marking it at the four, all of a sudden you're wondering, where's Denzel getting his minutes, and where is this rookie, Chandler Hutchinson, getting his minutes? That's going to be a very interesting part of training camp. I honestly have no answer for you there right now. I will say that to his, you know, in his opinion, Denzel Valentine thinks that he should be a starter on this team and is good enough to be a starter in this league. I laugh at that. No disrespect to Denzel. I admire him, and I admire that after a pretty rough rookie year, Denzel did increase his stats pretty much across the board this past season and proved to be a pretty reliable catch and shoot 3-point shooter at times. But you know, it's sort of a gross passing of the guard because Denzel was not a very athletic four-end guy who the Bulls are. It's just their cookie cutter draft pick type, right? Denzel Valentine. Chandler Hutchinson, another 4-year guy who's already 22 coming out of Boise State, had a big number jump in stats as far as his numbers as a junior and then really as a senior when he was the guy offensively at Boise State. But you're just, you know, he's a new version of Denzel with maybe a little bit of a longer wingspan and a bit more athleticism. So to that point, I would say my hope is that Chandler Hutchinson at an early point of this season and maybe even in training camp is turning some of the eyes of Fred and his staff to say this kid might be more deserving of Denzel's minutes.
I think that it's going to be between Denzel, Holiday, and Hutchinson for those backup 2 and 3 minutes. So, you know, one of those guys is going to miss out on a nightly basis. You would hope that Hutchinson and Valentine can get that, but that probably won't be the case to start the season because Justin Holiday inexplicably led this team in minutes last year, playing 32 a night and shooting 37% from the field on a just a nonsense type of usage, especially early on. That did peter out as the season went on, as it should have. The projected starting five that you've put here, Matt, we've talked about Chris Dunn and Zach LaVine as the starting guards. We've got Lauri Markkanen at the 4, Robin Lopez at the 5. But at the 3, the guy who is on that $20 million contract, Jabari Parker, playing out of position, coming off 2 ACL injuries, a guy who struggles defensively at the best of times at his natural position, and now is going to be played in a position where he's going to struggle even further. The most positive thing I can say about Jabari is he had a couple of good games in the playoffs defensively, and his efficiency was right back to normal coming off the second ACL, which is hard to do. LaVine couldn't do it. LaVine's efficiency was horrible coming back with his first ACL, but Jabari, the shots actually went in, and he is a strong offensive player, but he's going to get cooked on the defensive end at this position. He's not a strong rebounder. He doesn't block any shots. He doesn't really get steals. His passing has improved, but the efficiency is a decent step forward for him. But where's he going to fit into this pecking order? Is this still one of those things that we just don't know? Because he hasn't really met a shot he doesn't like to take.
No, he doesn't. And again, this goes back to my fear of the best interest of this rebuild moving forward and what the front office wants to see happen.
Oh, yeah.
And part of that is Levine maybe shooting more shots on a nightly basis than Markkanen. And another part of that is really wanting to prove to a skeptical fan base that Jabari can play the three and he should play the three and he's going to be effective at the three. And they're going to shove that down our throats. And I for one, am not convinced. And look, there is a sizable contingent of Bulls fans here in Chicago that are saying, yes, the hometown kid, the kid who followed in Derrick Rose's Simeon high school footsteps, and he needs to come home to Chicago, welcome home. It's the same people that were like, yeah, signing Dwayne Wade is a great idea because he's a Chicago guy. It's like, please, people, let's talk about basketball X's and O's for a second. Jabari's not a fit at the three. I think what will hopefully help alleviate this a little bit is that the Bulls, and especially Fred Hoiberg, who is, you know, three ball crazy, are going to let Jabari shoot more threes than Jason Kidd did in Milwaukee. And that it could be one of many ways in which Jabari actually has a stronger, better relationship with his coach in Chicago as opposed to what he had going on in Milwaukee. If Jabari proves, because he did see a little bit of an uptick in three-point attempts, if he can knock them down at a respectable rate, a high 30, something like that, to make defenses respect that, then maybe you start to see the slasher Jabari really capitalize on his offensive versatility. But as you mentioned on the defensive end, that's largely why I was not in favor of this signing, not to mention the two ACL tears and the risk that comes with that. Playing Jabari at the three and Levine at the two defensively, what I keep saying is that's like a screen door on a submarine. Like, the Bulls are going, maybe Jabari and Levine can each pour in 20-plus points tonight, but the Bulls are going to give up 140. At some point, it doesn't matter how effective you be offensively if you literally can't stop a thing. Another thing to think about on that end is that the Bulls were not a team that switched a lot on defense last year compared to the rest of the league and the way that that's trending. We're hearing that, led by Jim Boylan, Fred Hoiberg's associate head coach, who will be handling most of the defensive work, that they are going to try to implement more of a switching defense this season. And when you talk about Space Cadet Zach LaVine and the only plays defense when he feels like a Jabari Parker in those switching situations, playing next to each other at the two and the three, it's got a nightmare outcome written all over it from my perspective.
I still think he does have some fantasy value. Yahoo's got him ranked outside the top 120. I think he can beat that. Like, even last season, playing just 24 minutes a night, returning from the ACL, he was still the 146th ranked player. So he can be better than that. So I feel pretty good about him being a top 100 guy. I don't think he's going to be back to that top 50 level that he was before he tore that ACL. But encouragingly, with the three, as you mentioned, the last two seasons, he shot 37 and 38% from three on 3.5 and 2.6 attempts per game, which is way up from what he did, say, in the 15-16 season, where he only took half a three per game. So he got more confidence, the shot went in, and he started taking more of them, which obviously does help him. But again, not a strong rebounder and not doing much else in those other areas in terms of steals or blocks, but he's still going to have some value at that spot. In terms of on ESPN in fantasy ranks for this team, I don't think there's much value there. But as I said, on Yahoo, I think Parker's got some value. I think Dunn's got a ton of value. But on the flip side, I don't like Levine. He comes in at 53rd ranked on ESPN. That's a nonsense ranking. And the other guy, Punch Bob, Bobby Portis at 106. I can't see any way, Matt, that Portis is able to recreate what he did last season or even improve on it with the addition of Wendell Carter and with Jabari Parker in town as well. How can Portis get anywhere near what he did last year, where he played 23 minutes a night and averaged 13-7 and was the 127th ranked player? Can he get anywhere even close to that? I don't see how he gets there.
Yeah, it's going to be tough for Bobby to not even just match, but improve upon his numbers from last year with, as you said, the arrivals of Jabari Parker and the rookie Wendell. And to Bobby's credit, he welcomed both of those players to Chicago with open arms and said in his first interview after the Jabari signing happened that he was thrilled to have Jabari on board and he thinks that it's all going to work out great. And of course, some of that is just positive spin. And, you know, Bobby's still kind of repairing his image a little bit after the way last season started. And he's made great strides because after serving the suspension, he came out and played like a man possessed. He was you know, obviously, as you said, kind of like Blakeney, kind of like Levine, a guy, you know, also Jabari, a guy who's not afraid to shoot the ball. But you saw Bobby's points per game jump to 13.2 last season compared to seven, hovering around 7 points per game as a rookie and a second year player. And he bumped up his rebounds. He bumped up his assists. And I like Bobby is on the cusp of being a very good bench player in this league. And he has set the goal for himself to be the sixth man of the year this season. But with Jabari unquestionably going to be having to play some minutes at the four based on Hoiberg adjusting for a lot smaller lineups that their opponents are trotting out on a nightly basis, and Wendell Carter Jr. needing minutes, and Markkanen, of course, being your do not move this guy cornerstone at the four, it's going to be hard for Bobby to bump up his 22.5 minutes per game next season. If there is an injury somewhere in the front court, you can see Bobby as a guy you could scoop up for your fantasy team who will all of a sudden be a potential double-double guy on a nightly basis. But unless somebody else in that Bulls front court goes down, I don't see that happening.
He also was a guy that took his usage up from 19 to 26% last season. So again, just jacking shots left, right, and center. And that's going to be a little bit harder with a full season of Zach LaVine and Jabari Parker there as well. And of course, as you mentioned, Wendell Carter. So I just don't know why he's ranked at 106 on ESPN. That's anticipating he actually improves from last season, which is going to be tough to do again. I think that usage probably comes down a bit. And again, like so many of these guys we've talked about, Markkanen, Lopez, Parker, the big men, they just don't block any shots. And Portis is one of the worst defenders in the NBA, in my opinion, especially as a big man. He's got no idea. He's a black hole offensively, but to give him credit, he did double his assist rate last season, so that's good, because in the past, he'd been that guy that's once the ball goes to him, you might as well just jog down the other end, because you're not getting it back. That did improve a little bit from Portis last season, but I do find it hard for him to take that step forward that ESPN rank may be suggesting. On Yahoo, he's down at 161. I think that's totally fine. That's a more realistic expectation of where he's going to end up. We're down at the back end of the roster now, Matt. We've spoken about the Hammer, Denzel Valentine, a little bit. Cameron Payne is in there as the backup point guard. What did you think of, again, this is mainly just to satisfy me and my Payne obsession. What did you think of when Payne was installed as the starter last season when Dunn went down? How did you think he performed? Because I thought he was pretty good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that when he came to Chicago and for most of his time in Chicago until getting that run of minutes last season when Dunn went down, Payne was nothing but the butt of a joke here in Chicago. Going back to that trade that the Bulls made with OKC a couple years ago, where the Bulls sent two of their top six guys in Taj Gibson and Doug McDermott to OKC for two guys on expiring deals, a bad backup point guard with a broken foot, and the Bulls somehow were the team that gave a draft pick away in that deal. It's like, I mean, Bulls front office, and rightly so, got roasted for that one. And there were, on media day at the start of that season, pictures of Cam Payne with his foot in a cast scooting around the Bulls practice facility on a scooter. And that's just, you know, that's fodder for Bulls Twitter and Bulls Reddit trolls. And that's all the campaign was. They tried to shove him into the rotation when they were making a playoff push in that three alpha season with Butler, Wade, and Rondo still here. That went horribly for campaign, but to his credit, he brushed off all of that hate and all that shade and that awful experimental first half a season in Chicago. And when he came back healthy and subbed in, he proved himself to be better than Jaren Grant. And
oh, yeah.
You know, let's say this, that's not a hard test. Jaren Grant is the definition of somewhere below mediocre when it comes to guards in the NBA these days. But there were moments where campaign showed his ability to break defenses down off the dribble. He's got some crafty moves, dribbling around the trees when he gets into the paint. He can kick out. He can find open looks to guys making backdoor cuts. And sometimes he can actually make the shots that he takes. So I'm with you. Campaign has moved from nothing but the butt of a joke to maybe it's not terrible if he's our primary backup point guard this season, but it's not like anybody in Chicago is in love with campaign, even as a backup.
He shot 39% from three last season. And one of the key points you brought up with Payne, he had a broken foot, and he's had a broken foot for 2 years. And he played well before the broken foot. And then when OKC brought in, I'm going to say it was DJ Augustin to replace him as the backup. He was playing well in OKC as the backup. Then he broke his foot. Then he broke his foot again. And that wiped out the next two seasons of him. And he sucked in that time. There was no doubt. that he struggled, but it is pretty hard to do that when you've got a broken foot and you're still recovering from that. He came in, he averaged, last season, he only played, 23 minutes a night in his 25 games, but he was still a top 150 fantasy guy because he averaged 4.5 assists. He averaged a steal. He hit 1.5 threes in 23 minutes, and you get that at 30, 31 minutes. You're talking about a top 100, top 90 type of a player. It's not going to happen because Dunn's going to be the starter, but if Dunn goes down with another injury, Payne is an automatic pickup in every situation. And he is someone in those deeper leagues. He's still got that ability to be a top 100 guy in a backup role. Top 200 guy in a backup role, because he has a good assist rate, a good steal rate, and can hit threes. And if that role increases at all, just don't laugh off Cameron Payne because he had two shit seasons and he danced a lot. I think he's a capable player. And if he has to start for a stretch of time, he will put up numbers. I don't think there's anyone that can really doubt that, because we did see that last season in that short amount of time. What's your over-under on games that Omar Asik plays this season?
Can I say 0.5?
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think he's not. We haven't even talked about Chris Felizio, who's like the fourth center at the moment. Asik is the fifth guy. We don't need to talk about these guys. They're just not going to play. They're not going to be on the court. They're not going to contribute when they're out there. So those two guys are pretty much dead money. Asik's got a non-partial guarantee for next season, so he'll be waived at the end of this year. Felizio's still got another 3 years left, I believe, on that contract. So that's going to be a great one. We'll see how that ends up working out for him. Matt, I reckon we are done covering this Chicago Bulls team, but I believe you guys have got an interesting thing happening with Locked On Bulls and one Bobby Portis.
Yeah. To do a quick elevator pitch, and I appreciate you bringing that up. Next month, Saturday, September 8th, Locked On Bulls is hosting a bowling event with Bobby Portis, who, when talking in random Q&As with Bulls media over the past few years, has been very vocal and adamant about his bowling skills. As behind basketball, this is the thing that he is second best at. And it just started as kind of a running joke on our podcast. Eventually, some of our listeners started tweeting at Bobby because my co-host Jordan said, you know what, like I do a lot of bowling. I'm a pretty good bowler. I think I can take Bobby. It just exploded from there. Bobby accepted the challenge on Twitter. And over the past few weeks, we've been communicating with the venue and Bobby's agency here in Chicago and organizing all these details. But it's going to be a really fun event for Bulls fans at a great venue in Lincoln Park, the heart of Chicago. Bobby's going to bowl against my co-host Jordan. He's probably going to mop the floor with him. There's going to be food. There's going to be drinks. There's going to be free bowling. There's going to be, it's a great venue with billiards and darts and all that stuff, in addition to a fun night with Bobby Portis. And we're also going to be doing a live recording episode of Locked On Bulls with Bobby doing a little Q&A section with us. So it should all be a really fun time.
I wish that I was back in Chicago to that. And if you are in Chicago, make sure you're going down and trying to get tickets for that event to see Punch Bob and Jordan bowl off, to see who is the king of Chicago 10-pin bowling scene. I'm sure it's going to be a really great night, and it's a fantastic event. So make sure you are down. If you are in Chicago, hit up Matt on Twitter and check out his feed for the information. And of course, listen to Locked On Bulls, because that's where you can get all that information. What else have you got happening on Locked On Bulls in the coming week, Matt?
Well, we've really amped up our mailbag in the off season. And as I'm sure you know, I mean, at least with a fantasy show, you can really get amped up about, is right when people are getting ready to start planning for their NBA drafts. But in these off season NBA months, it's hard to find content. So we've really just embraced the listeners who are texting us and leaving us voicemails, because it's basically just a giant Q&A session. There are a couple, it's like Chris Dunn had an event back at his old school in Connecticut, and one of the Bulls assistant coaches went to show his support. So we talked about that and what its effect might be on Dunn's relationship with the coaching staff. Like, you're pulling content out of your butt at this point of the NBA offseason summer. So really, this upcoming week, we have a couple of interviews penciled in with some of our guests. We love to bring on other podcast hosts as well as some of the beat writers here in Chicago. So we have a couple of those penciled in, but we're also going to be really focusing on a lot of the mailbag content that we haven't gotten a chance to get to yet, because Bulls fans, they are starved for content. We're putting out 5 episodes a week on a team that's probably going back to the lottery, and people can't get enough. So the mailbag stuff, as I'm sure you find as well, can be some of your greatest content when you're trying to fill content in the downtime of the NBA year.
Absolutely. So guys, if you want to hear content that's been pulled right out of Matt's butt, go and listen to Locked On Bulls. Go and go and subscribe over there, and subscribe to this podcast. You can do that on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and of course, this show's on YouTube. Give me a thumbs up, leave a comment, share it with your friends. You know all the good stuff. Follow me on Twitter @RedRock_Beeble. Matt, where should they follow you?
at Bulls_pack and at LockedOnBulls.
Well, there you go. Go and follow Matt over there as well. Matt, thank you for coming on for the first time onto Locked On Fantasy Basketball and talking about the Chicago Bulls.
Absolutely, Josh. Had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Bobby Portis.